is it good news or bad news when the head of Boko Haram, the chief of Boko Haram terrorist group, blows himself up and dies? His name was Abu Bakr Shekau. Now, we generally know what Boko Haram is. We know that it's been active in northeast Nigeria. It's a very fundamentalist, violent, extremist group, so extremist that even ISIS finds it too violent and too extremist. Boko Haram also hit the global headlines in 2014 when it kidnapped 270 schoolgirls for the crime of going to a modern education facility, because Boko Haram literally means modern education, westernized education is prohibited, or implying that it's evil. Haram is a word from Arabic. Boko is a word from Hausa, which is the local tribal language in northeast Nigeria. Now, Boko Haram is the name that this organization is known by popularly and also globally in the media, but it has a more proper Arabic, long Arabic name, which is Jamaatu Ahle Sunnah Lida Awati Al Jihad, which literally means people committed to the Prophet's teaching for propagation of Islam and Jihad. It became Boko Haram because it characterized itself with its attacks on schooling facilities, particularly on women, and then in the course of time began using many of these young women as human bombs. They would just tie bombs around their waists and send them into markets, churches, sometimes even to mosques. This was a terrible organization. The chief of this organization has blown it himself up. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Now, as with many of these situations, nothing is black and white. Everything is a wide swath of gray and darker usually than brighter. So while he has died, it will weaken Boko Haram as it is, but see what is it that might follow. So how was he killed? How did he die? That is the key to what we are trying to understand. He was at odds with a faction which is now getting larger, faction of Boko Haram, which broke away in 2015. After 2014, at some point, Boko Haram decided that they will become part of ISIS. They decided that they will submit to the authority of the ISIS in the Middle East. We all know about Mosul and Mosul to Syria, the large area that ISIS controlled at one point. So Boko Haram said they will submit to the caliphate. But within Boko Haram, there were disputes. Disputes were ideological and religious. A lot of people in Boko Haram said, look, Islam doesn't teach us to attack fellow Muslims. The rest of they did not have a problem with. I'm not saying Islam teaches you to attack the rest, but they said we have no problem attacking the rest, but not Muslims. Also, we don't like the idea of using women as human bombs. So these ideological issues gathered, and this fellow, the leader, who had by now become very powerful and very prominent, it had also gone to his head. He began seeing himself as a big gang leader, a big dada of that loosely administered, in fact hardly administered, region, and he'd become a strong man in his own right. So ISIS leadership back home in the Middle East, they replaced him. They decided to replace him and make him number two to the new, to his successor. And his successor was somebody called Abu Musab al-Barnawi. So al-Barnawi became the chief. Shekau, Abu Bakr Shekau became number two. This was not acceptable to Abu Bakr Shekau. So because Abu Bakr Shekau refused to accept this forced succession, the organization split into two. So one was obviously Boko Haram. It stayed as it was as Boko Haram. The other one became the Islamic State of West African Province. That then became the new Boko Haram, and increasingly that's become more powerful than the original. Now they've been launching a war, they've been fighting Abu Bakr Shekau and his people. They had him cornered in a forest. In the forest called Sambisa, he was cornered. There was a firefight. He ran away with a few of his close lieutenants. He went into the jungles for 5 days. He was chased. Finally, he was cornered into a bush. He was asked to surrender. He preferred to blow himself up instead of surrendering. So how do we know this? We know this because a spokesman of ISWAP, which is Islamic State of West African Province, he gave audio recordings to Reuters and AFP. And I'm sharing a couple of stories from international press that talk about this. They shared an audio recording saying that he's dead for sure. They said, Abu Bakr Shekau, God has judged him by sending him to heavens. That's what they said. And then they followed up. Now, Abu Bakr Shekau has died many times. As I read up on his history, it looks like he's died even more times than Dawood Ibrahim on Indian TV channels, particularly our Commando Comic TV channels. When they get bored, when there isn't something else to do, or when they need to shift the headlines to something, they suddenly say, Dawood Ibrahim mar gaya, or his kidneys have packed up. But similarly, Abu Bakr Shekau several times has been pronounced dead. Happened with Osama bin Laden also a few times. Now, this time, everybody involved is confirming that he is actually dead. And if he is dead, that means the equation there changes. Now, if equation there changes, it means also all the experts say that ISWAP now, that is Islamic State of West African Province, they will now try to lure in other chieftains and other fighters in Boko Haram. If that happens, if they succeed in doing that, then they'll become a much stronger force. By the way, in case you are wondering what an important global terrorist Abu Bakr Shekau was, he had a price of $7 million on his head by the American government. He's gone. But what happens is, sometimes two evils control each other, they counter each other, they spend at least some time ammunition fighting each other, they kill each other's people. In this case, if one organization then collapses and gets neatly folded into the other one, then the other one becomes more powerful right now. Second has less of a challenge because Nigerian army, which is otherwise very strong, Nigeria is a very strong, powerful, big country. It's the most populous African country, about 21 crore people and rising very fast, among the fastest growing populations in the world are in this part of Nigeria. It is also an oil power, great inequality, widespread, widely spread out population, poor human development indicators, per capita income still a little bit higher than India's. That is because it's got a lot of oil. It is the 12th largest oil producer in the world and the 8th largest oil exporter in the world. In spite of that, in spite of the wealth, it has its northeastern part is a bloody mess. It's a mess. It's not controlled by the state, and its army in that region does not now patrol the area, does not bother controlling the area too much. They have confined themselves to what is called a super camp. So large bodies of the army live in camps. As and when an opportunity arises, they go out again in large convoys, large patrols. But there is no effort to control or govern the countryside or assert the authority of the state in the countryside. So it is in that free-for-all situation, that free-for-all region, that Boko Haram has been operating. Now, the spokesman who issued this statement to Reuters and AFP, he said, quote unquote, Shekau preferred to be humiliated in afterlife than be humiliated on earth and kill himself by explosion. He also exposed the spokesperson that they asked him to surrender, repent and join them instead. But obviously, Shekau decided to kill himself. Of the 270 girls that he kidnapped, by the way, in 2014, more than 100 still haven't come back, and many are presumed to be dead. And many who've come back, many of the women who they've been kidnapping, who've come back, tell you the same terrible stories that you hear of the ISIS in the Middle East. That is gang rapes, repeated marriage to the so-called fighters, very bad treatment, etc. So many of them are still missing. Many of them have been used as human bombs. You keep reading these stories. A human bomb blew up in a market in some village in Nigeria, northeastern Nigeria, killing a lot of people. Those are the ones that he's been carrying out. And in 2009, he launched his full-fledged insurgency. Muhammad Yusuf was the founder of the group, which was more puritanical to begin with. But as Muhammad Yunus passed away and Shekhao took over, he made it a purely armed insurgency, just a very large gang of thugs that nobody knew what to do about. Council on Foreign Relations, the Washington-based think tank, reputed think tank. Remember, its president Richard Haass has been my guest on Off the Cuff some time back. Council on Foreign Relations estimates that he and his group have killed more than 30,000 people. There are many other think tanks, Africa Watchers and big global media organizations, which estimate this number to be at 40,000. More than 2 million people in that sparsely populated area have been driven out, so they become refugees or they become a floating population. So even when the founder, Muhammad Yusuf, was in charge, the preacher, even then this group was at odds with the government. It was still a violent group, though not as much as it became under Shekhao. Muhammad Yunus was then captured by the army, by the Nigerian army, and he died in custody. It was in that situation that Shekhao took over. Since then, Nigerian army has not been able to control him. What Nigerian army claims is that we've driven Boko Haram out of all the inhabited areas, any urban areas or large villages. Boko Haram, on the other hand, claims, and both are right in a way, that we have driven Nigerian army into their big camps, their super camps. We control the countryside. Nigerian army, in fact, Nigerian government, which is a powerful government, so powerful, by the way, that they just banned Twitter. Muhammadu Buhari's government, he's the president right now, they got so determined to fight this force, that is the two different battles now, one Boko Haram, second ISWAP, that they set up a multinational force to fight them. That is, besides Nigerian soldiers, they got soldiers from Chad, neighboring countries, Chad, Cameroon, Niger, and also hired some South African mercenaries. In spite of that, they have not been able to control this menace. Now, as we understand this menace, we also read a lot of stuff in global literature, global contemporary literature, not literature, literature. Researchers, journalists and others now saying that because ISIS is being driven out of the Middle East, they lost Mosul some time back, they are now losing out and their area is shrinking. They actually hardly have a geographical stronghold or a foothold in the Middle East. They don't control a territory that's their own anymore. But it looks like, if you see all this analysis coming out from international sources, credible international sources, that the same ISIS is now moving to Africa. And in Africa also, the area generally that's called the Sahel. Now the Sahel, S-A-H-E-L, is a very large area. The area of Sahel is about the area of India. That is more than 3 lakh square kilometers. And the Sahel runs, it has a bunch of countries, at least 10 countries, runs from west to the east or east to the west, depending on how you want to see it. And it's a wide region between the Sahara, between the southern edge of the Sahara, and then the greener savannas or the grasslands of Africa. That's where you find the famous wildlife and the safaris, etc. So this is the region in between. It's a very wide region, you can see on the map. It involves many, many countries from South Atlantic on the western side to Indian Ocean on the eastern side. So if you start from the western side, you have Senegal, southern Mauritania, Mali, Burkina Faso, Algeria, Niger, Nigeria, Chad, Sudan, North Eritrea. Now, this is also a very diverse region because most of these countries, or many of these countries, particularly on the western side, are Francophone because they were French colonies. Nigeria is a unique country. It is a very large country in terms of population, 21 crores, largest single country in Africa, but it is an Anglophone country. It's a country that works in English. It has many languages and tribes, but you know, it is English speaking, the elite speak English, the business of the government is done in English. Whereas all the countries around Nigeria That is, if you see to the east, it has Cameroon. To the northeast, it has Chad. To the west, it has Togo. Benin also in the west, and Niger in the north. All these countries are Francophone countries. They speak French. Now, ISIS has become very powerful in this large spread out Sahel region. And what this new development does is that around Lake Chad, please see the map, around Lake Chad, which is among the largest lakes in Africa, Lake Chad is now about, I would say, it keeps varying in size, but about 400 square kilometers. In fact, if you look at the data, it tells you that there's been such environmental destruction in this area that between 1963 and 1998, Lake Chad shrank by 95%. Lately, there seems to have been some improvement, but Lake Chad also borders several countries, as you can see on this map. Now, in that area, Boko Haram was popular. That area has water, that area has some more population. Now, if these Sahel groups and the ISWAP group take over that area fully, and this balancing force, balancing more evil force of Boko Haram goes away, and Boko Haram fighters also join them, then Islamic State actually consolidates itself in the heart of Africa, and that is the crux of the situation right now. So this is the crux of the problem, and this is the sum and substance of the issue, that one evil man is gone, a truly evil man, a man so evil and who ran an organization so evil that it kidnapped young girls all the time, treated them badly, gang rapes, mass rapes, torture, and forcibly sending them as human bombs, even as children. That fellow is gone, so the world has to heave a sigh of relief. But at the same time, the problem in this region, which has now become the world's most troubled region, that problem isn't getting any better. In fact, it may get worse because of his departure.